Myron Metcalf, the first 4 days of March Madness are in the books. Rounds 1 and 2, done. So 96 hours in, you said before to us, you see more at home than you do on press row sometimes. What's your take, player?
You know, there's a lot of chalk, which I guess is not that surprising because I thought the top teams had kind of separated themselves. But I did think we'd see a few more upsets than we already did. But, you know, I think this is ultimately really the real fans' ideal kind of Sweet 16. You know, a couple of Cinderella types, if you will. But I think this is going to be one of those tournaments where when we get to the end, there won't be any debate about who the best team in America is.
So before we dive into the analysis, now that we know you're going to be on the road, any particular venues you'd like to hit and which regions do you think will be the liveliest?
Well, I'll be in Detroit, you know, so obviously Purdue will be there. I think, you know, the guys in the East with UConn, that's probably going to be the region everybody's talking about because of the two-peat potential and the fact that UConn can be the first team to two-peat since Florida did it in 06 and 07. So I think there will be a lot of buzz around that. I think, you know, Houston and Dallas will be interested. You know, kind of were on the ropes a little bit against Texas A&M. How does that affect things? And then I feel like North Carolina is almost like the wild card. Like nobody's really talking about them. They played really well. And it's weird to see a North Carolina team fly under the radar. But in a weird way, that's kind of how it feels. So I'm just excited to see it all unfold.
Is two-peat what we're doing now? Back-to-back is out? That's what the college basketball writers are saying now?
That's what I'm saying. But it's amazing to me in a sport where you don't have this overwhelming talent like you do in the NBA that you haven't seen it in so long. But I think UConn is right there with a chance to do it.
The best stories from this year's men's March Madness are emerging. As 16 teams get ready to move to the next round of the tournament, for some of them, it was a real challenge. And for others, it really felt like a breeze. Our own Myron Metcalf is here to break down what happened last weekend and tell us who's hot coming into this Sweet 16 weekend. I'm Clint Yates. It's Thursday, March 28th. This is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, Myron, going into this, we talked about some of the Blue Bloods looking more vulnerable than usual. And then on day one, Kentucky and Coach Calipari lost yet again in the first round, this time to Oakland. And since that loss, we've heard from the Kentucky AD that Coach Cal is definitely coming back next season. While this is a great story for Oakland, what exactly happened with Big Blue?
You know, Big Blue was a big letdown. To me, this had been the pattern all year. Like, they would have these really excellent stretches where you said, wow, okay, that's a bunch of NBA talent. If those guys bring it, they can be a Final Four team. I thought they could be a Final Four team.
Dillingham to Ivicic. Great pass to Fierro. Ivicic is really skilled. I mean, that ball barely was in his hand, and he found Fierro under the basket.
Kentucky averages 17 assists per game. That's 10th most in the country.
But if you look at the metrics defensively, they were not consistent. And young teams that don't play good defense are always going to be in a tough spot. But let's be honest. They just didn't know what to do with one dude on that Oakland team, Jack Golkey.
Golkey comes off a screen, fakes the three. Now he'll take it. Yes, sir!
I mean, he was coming off the screens the same way every single time, and nobody adjusted.
Golkey, here he is again, putting up a three.
Oh, goodness.
Golkey has 18 points in 11 minutes.
So, I mean, somewhere, Clinton, there is an eighth grade basketball coach who was watching that game, and they were probably in tears as they're going, these are things we taught you in middle school, and I got a bunch of NBA draft picks who can't adjust, so there's no excuses for what happened with Kentucky. But I also think that's a team where when you have a lot of guys, five-star recruits, NBA-level talent, they haven't seen necessarily as much adversity as they saw in that game. And now those Oakland guys, their whole life is adversity. They're always trying to climb the ladder and prove something to themselves. And I think Kentucky learned a lesson.
Yeah, that was a flat-out bad loss. You can talk about a guy getting hot, but don't tell me that you're not looking at that as a Kentucky fan and not flatly being embarrassed. But you touched on something I want to bring up, which is that element of youth versus experience and where that's going. I mean, Oakland had a team full of dudes that were effectively grown men up against a bunch of teenagers, speaking to the adversity standpoint that you brought up.
Yeah, I mean, I think coaches today kind of have to decide, do you want to be cool or do you want to win? Because if you want to be cool, you'll go get future NBA guys. You'll go get a bunch of freshmen who are five-star recruits, guys who are going to put their names in the NBA draft the following summer, and you can say, this is where NBA prospects come to develop. Cool. If you want to win national championships, you have to get older. And I think that has been the challenge that some of the blue bloods are facing right now. If a five-star kid wants to come to your school, you say yes. Who's going to turn them down? At the same time, the history of the one-and-done era is that one-and-dones don't win national titles. And you saw Oakland and those older guys. And not just older guys, Clinton. Guys with stories. Jack Golkey had been a Division II player who wasn't even good enough to be D1. And then he transfers to a mid-major school where he's trying to prove himself. And then he comes off the bench, right? Guys like that, those dudes will walk to a place like Kentucky for a chance to play. Nothing was handed to them. And I'm not saying things were handed to the Kentucky guys, but there's a bit of a silver platter element that I think Kentucky has dealt with for a long time. And when you play some older dudes who faced adversity, it's a different situation.
So the other part of this is that Calipari had made some pretty tough comments about previous coaches, Tubby Smith, Billy Gillespie, kind of opening himself up to a lot of criticism. Do you think this loss affects his legacy as a head coach? Kentucky is one thing, but overall as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's won one national championship with the most NBA prospects that any coach has ever had in a 12, 13, 14-year period. So it definitely affects his legacy. He won a national championship in 2012 with a future Hall of Famer in Anthony Davis. Got to the Elite Eight with John Wall before that and DeMarcus Cousins. 2015, he wins 38 games, his first 38 games, and then they lose in the Final Four. After that, a couple of Elite Eight appearances, some good talent. But what has Cal really done over the last decade? Like, what are the achievements? In a place where they legitimately only hang national championship banners, right? Where they legitimately only acknowledge teams that make real runs, it doesn't even exist in many ways what he's done over the last decade. And then when you factor in guys he had post Karl Anthony Towns in 2015, Tyrese Maxey and guys like that, Malik Monk and Bam Adebayo, like he's had so many talented players, yet he hasn't even gotten back to a Final Four. So I think the legacy could be of a guy who won early with a future Hall of Famer, but really never found a way to duplicate that success, even though he was continuing to bring in top talent.
So the next blue blood who dropped out of sight early is Kansas, of course. They fell to Gonzaga in the second round. Now, it's hard to paint Gonzaga as an underdog. I get that. But Bill Self's squad doesn't make it to the second weekend of the tournament. Myron, was there any way to see this coming?
Yes, I saw it coming a couple weeks ago. And anybody who watched them play BYU in Lawrence when they lost a big-time second-half comeback, the injuries were a challenge. Like, Kevin McCullough was an All-American player who got hurt and was trying to play through a knee injury, and he just couldn't. And everybody could see that. Then Hunter Dickinson gets hurt. I mean, they were a bubble team without those two guys. And without Kevin McCullough, you can make the case, you know, they weren't even a real contender. So I just think it was a team that, you know, probably peaked really early, but never really was the team that ultimately beat UConn and some of the other top teams they beat early in the season.
There were a lot of big upsets in the first round. Yale, Duquesne, James Madison, Grand Canyon, they all advanced to the second round. But outside of North Carolina State, we'll get into that in a little bit, none of those Cinderellas made it to the ball to extend that metaphor. But who stood out to you from that group?
You know, I love what Yale did. James Madison, I think, is a school where if you watch them throughout the season, remember, they start the year and they beat Tom Izzo and Michigan State in East Lansing.
Final play, 2.8 seconds to go. Fears will inbound. It's Walker. Walker at half court, across, take it away. Whoa. And an early season stunner in East Lansing. James Madison shocks the Spartans, 79-76.
And the only reason Tom Izzo even played that game was because his nephew is on the staff. So he did it as a favor, a family favor, and said, okay, fine, we'll schedule James Madison, big deal. And then James Madison wins that game. And then they kind of carried that success into the NCAA tournament throughout the year. So I think those were a couple of teams that stood out as well. Duquesne obviously got hot, but the number one is NC State. I think that's the team that has just sort of shocked the world and what they were able to do. I mean, before the tournament, they lost 7 of 9 games. 7 of 9. Kevin Keats was on the verge of getting fired. Like, this team was about to fall apart. And then they rattle off an ACC tournament championship, win 2 games in the NCAA tournament.
Corner 3 is good for Diarra.
You know, one thing, he wanted to challenge them from 3, and so far NC State, they've been up to the task from the three-point line. 35% from 3, higher than their season average.
And now they're in the Sweet 16. I don't know who we have at ESPN in the film department, Clinton, but somebody needs to get a camera crew at NC State and what's happening right now, because this is one of the coolest stories I think we've seen in a long time.
Sounds like a job for Myron Metcalf. But I will say this. Do people understand what actually happened with North Carolina? Do I have this right? The coach was going to get fired, but has an automatic extension escalator clause if he won certain things, and then they turn around and win 5 games in 4 days in D.C. Mind you, more games than the Washington Wizards have won on their own home court this year. Break down what that actually looked like in terms of the coach and his basically coaching future with NC State.
Yeah, I mean, literally, he was on the hot seat, and it's no secret. Everyone knew it. Again, they were 2-7 in their last 9 games. Going into the NCAA tournament, they were a disaster. Nothing was working, and they were losing to some good teams, some average teams, and then they just come in and change everything in the NCAA tournament. Right now, Kevin Keats is owed $500,000 just based on what he's done. He also gets an automatic extension in his deal, right? And if you're Kevin, and I know Kevin, real humble guy. It was a high school coach, kind of worked his way up the ranks. But I know in the back of his mind, when he goes to his AD and does the how you like me now a little bit, right? Like, to go from I'm on the hot seat to you can deposit that $500,000 in my account by Friday, that's a pretty cool story. I mean, this is why the tournament exists, for stories like this.
Speaking of awkward potential exits, I do not want to forget about Long Beach State. Last week, we hit on their dramatic path to the tournament and the circumstances surrounding Dan Monson. Him coaching the team after he was told he was being fired and how they made that whole run. I think Arizona coach Tommy Lloyd put it pretty well.
That guy gave 17 years to Long Beach State, and they fired him without another year in his contract. So he's walking out of this deal in 30 days with no benefits, no severance pay, nothing. When you sit in my position and what we put our families through, I mean, I don't think that's right.
Was this a satisfying end to his regime to you, Myron? Did Dan Monson coaching that team in that way in the first round give you an ending that you thought was appropriate considering?
Yeah, I mean, I think it made the AD, Bobby Smithern, look silly. And then he came out and made these comments saying he fired Dan Monson because he wanted to inspire that run to the tournament. I mean, that was a joke. I don't know. If you're a coach and you see that, do you want to be the head coach at Long Beach State? Good luck. because Dan Monson has done that for a long time. And you know what that job is, Clinton. That's one of those jobs where you are recruiting not even two-star kids sometimes. Like, you got to have so many relationships to identify players to get guys in Cali that the Power Five aren't taking. And then there's a whole tier of schools below the Power Five where there's a lot of talent. You got to sometimes go beneath that and sort of figure it out. And Dan Monson has been able to do that. And I think it was a satisfying end, but I thought the AD's comments in the tournament, I thought they were rude and inappropriate. And I thought Dan deserved better.
You guys see the Seinfeld when George Costanza was trying to get fired and couldn't get lose his job and still going to work every day? And that's me. You know, I've just have reflected this week that I don't have a job. I've got everything I got with my family, with my players, with my friends. And next week I got a car payment, a house payment. I don't know how it's going to do it, but don't really care.
He was facing Tommy Lloyd. Do people know who Tommy Lloyd is? Tommy Lloyd has been Mark Few's faithful assistant at Gonzaga literally for over a decade. Do you know who Mark Few is? Mark Few is Dan Munson's former assistant at Gonzaga who took over at Gonzaga when Dan Munson left the job for Minnesota. Like, they did this in front of family, right? Like, that's what they didn't understand. So I think Dan Munson got the last laugh, and I think he'll get another job, but I think there'll be a lot of coaches who look at Long Beach State and go, do I really want to be a part of that?
Coming up, Myron gets us ready for the Sweet 16. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Okay, Myron, the Sweet 16 games tip off tonight, and there's no better place to start than with the defending champion UConn Huskies. I was on TV on Monday, and the entire panel said they would take the field over UConn, which I thought was insane, but that's another matter. They've had zero problems so far through the first two rounds. They face San Diego State tonight. Does it feel to you like we're looking at a two-peat, as you would say, champion?
It looks like it to me. You know, I mean, I guess it's trendy to pick against UConn, but, you know, anytime you see Thanos, who already has five Infinity Stones, maybe you assume somebody can keep the last one from him. But I don't know how you do it, because they might be better than last year's team. And last year's team basically threw a bunch of haymakers in the tournament and KO'd everybody. Like, no one was close to them. And now this year, Donovan Clingan, the big man, is even better than he was a year ago. Tristan Newton, All-American. You have so much talent on this team. And I think the greatest thing that's happened with UConn is Dan Hurley had to create an edge. Like, he had to create something to make this team feel like the world's against them. Now, none of that's real. You're UConn. You won a national championship. You're favored to win a second one. But Dan Hurley has really taken on this Tupac me against the world thing, and it's worked. Like, somehow this UConn team has convinced itself that nobody believes in them, and it's genius. So Dan Hurley's attitude about this has been remarkable. And somehow, in a weird way, this almost feels like Bash at the Beach, 96, I think it was, when Hulk Hogan's coming down and he's there. And everybody thinks, oh, wow, Hall and Nash, he's going to come into the ring and take on those guys. And he joins them. I feel like Dan Hurley is taking on this kind of NWO vibe a little bit. Like, nobody thinks we can do it. And his team has embraced that as well. And you're seeing them become the villains a little bit. And I think they love it, Clinton, because that's exactly what Dan Hurley needed, for his team to think that people don't think we're going to win a second
one. Got to show them the 24-inch pythons, brother. Anyways, moving over to number one, Purdue. We asked if they were the same old team we've seen in recent years, but they've handled their business so far. They'll square off against number five, Gonzaga, who we mentioned, upset Kansas in the second round. How does Purdue manage to still be alive after the weekend in your eyes?
They have the best college basketball player I've covered since Zion. I mean, there's no matchup for Zach Edey. There's nothing you can do. They play Utah State in the second round. Danny Sprinkle did everything you're supposed to do as a coach, playing a 7'4", 290-pound human being who is really, really good.
Edey down low and double, and he finds Kaufman Run. He's just so good being patient in there.
They doubled him every single time. They sit body after body at Zach Edey.
They love to feed Edey from the top. Matt Painter said they want paint catches, not post-ups.
It was a good strategy. At halftime, he had 21 points and 11 rebounds, and they doubled him every single time. The challenge is, you could double Purdue last year and say, nobody else on this team can beat us. Zach Edey might get 40. So what? Now they're one of the top three-point shooting teams in America. So Utah State is doubling Zach Edey every single time, leaving room for their shooters. They made 48% of their threes in that game.
Coleman on the wing, shot clock at 4. Jones, a 3. He claims it.
I think Purdue is just below UConn based on the way that they're playing right now. They have the best player in the field. They have a team that shoots threes better than anybody else that's alive still. And I think they're going to be tough. Gonzaga's been the best offensive team in America for about 2 months now, but they just don't have an answer for a guy like Zach Edey. You send your best player at him, well, he's going to pick up early fouls because Zach Edey draws a lot of fouls. You keep double him the way that Utah State did every single time he touches the ball, you're leaving room for all the shooters. So I think Purdue is national championship good. And I think they're the best test for a team like UConn because of what Zach Edey is able to do.
Couple other teams that you were high on coming into this tournament, Creighton, a number 3 seed, and Tennessee, a number 2. Now they're facing off in the Sweet 16. In that matchup, what are you most excited about?
I think it's going to be a lot of star power. You know, I think you look at Creighton and the three guys, Trey Alexander, Baylor Shireman, Ryan Kalkbrenner, a really tough trio, the trio that helped them pull out and get to this point in the Sweet 16. And then you have a Tennessee team where I think against Texas, we saw how ugly things can get. If Dalton Connect is struggling, you know, I think he was 1-for-8 from the 3-point line. So it's going to be the Dalton Connect show. Can Dalton Connect put up 40, and can Tennessee slow down one of the most offensively balanced teams in the field? I think that is going to be the question, because I think Creighton is more talented. And here's the thing, Clinton, a lot of people go, okay, good defensive teams only win the national championship. That's right. But only good offensive teams win championships as well. If you just look at the profile and the metrics of the teams that are like Tennessee, 03 Syracuse, 2011 UConn, 2014 UConn, the teams that had one guy, Melo, Kemba Walker, Shabazz Napier, who kind of carried a team to a national championship. The problem is that is a really difficult thing to do. And you got to be great every night in order to pull that off. And I think that's just too much on Dalton Connect's shoulders. So I like Creighton in this game, but we'll see what happens.
You mentioned before that UNC had somewhat gone under the radar. And as a one seed, they're facing an Alabama team that comes from a highly disappointing SEC conference. They survived a battle with Grand Canyon last weekend. What do you like about those two facing off?
I mean, Alabama is beautiful and reckless at the same time. You know, we used to play in this church league, man, when I was a kid. And there was this team we played, and they had like three dudes who just would shoot threes. No defense, just all threes. You know what I mean? A couple guys dunking, no real strategy. You know, coach wouldn't call them plays. They were just hooping, right? That's what we said, right? They were just hooping. Alabama's just out there hooping. And sometimes it really works for them. They are one of the most explosive offensive teams in all of college basketball. But they're playing a North Carolina team that is sound and disciplined on both sides of the ball. One of the best defensive teams in America. Armando Bacot been doing this. I think he played with Vince Carter or something, right? I mean, he is a grown man and some. You have R.J. Davis, who I think is the best guard potentially in the field, one of the best guards in America. And the most positive thing about North Carolina is Harrison Ingram, who had struggled a lot, is starting to hit his threes again. So I just think North Carolina looks a lot like that North Carolina team from a couple years ago.
I want to ask about the South region. The two top seeds are still alive. Number one, Houston. Number two, Marquette. Of course, Duke is hanging around in the mix at a four seed, and they play NC State, see if they can end their magic ride. From what you've seen so far, do you see that region as the most wide open path to the Final Four in Arizona?
It feels that way. I mean, Houston and what they had to wrestle with Texas A&M, foul trouble has been an issue for Kelvin Sampson's team. At the same time, I see the positive. They had three key guys foul out, including two players who'd scored 50 points, and yet they still find a way to win as Texas A&M made a run. Marquette, Tyler Kolek being back is such a huge difference, averaging 11 assists per game, I think, in their last five games. He has just been a star for that group. NC State, you know, it's kind of like, will the fairy tale end? But I think Duke is probably the most promising group and probably the team that you look at and go, okay, this team is different maybe than the team that was going into Selection Sunday, because you have Kyle Filipowski, the lottery pick. You have Jeremy Roach, the veteran. But I think Jarrett McCain is the guy that everybody should be paying attention to, projected first-round pick. Like, here's what happens with freshmen sometimes. They're freshmen up until about mid-February, and then suddenly everything starts to click. And I think that's happened with Jarrett McCain. If you tell me Jarrett McCain shows up the way he has over the last couple of weeks, Duke could certainly be the most dangerous team in that region and could be your Final Four pick.
Last thing I'll ask you, Myron, we might not have a bunch of Cinderellas heading into the Sweet 16, but we do have a nice sprinkling of squads represented here. As we look towards a potentially expanded tournament down the line, how much do you think parity factors into what that could look like? We've seen different conference leaders talk about who should and who should not be in. Where does this stand for you?
Well, I think more than anything, if the idea is to keep out more mid-majors, the mid-majors won. You know, your teams like Yale and Grand Canyon, they've advanced. They have proven that they can play in this event. I wouldn't touch the tournament because I think it's great as it is. But if you're going to expand it, don't hurt the mid-majors. What I would like to see is add a few teams, maybe eight more teams, let's say, a few more play-in games, but make the bubble teams fight it out to get into the field, not the mid-majors who've won their conference tournament. So I just think, if anything, you look at this tournament, you go, there are a bunch of teams that can't schedule games because Power Fives will never go to their buildings. There are a bunch of teams that can't get the five-star kids or even the top guys in the portal, but they're old, experienced, disciplined, and on the right day, Oakland, they can play with anybody in America. Don't exclude the teams that belong there. If you're going to hurt anybody, make those bubble teams fight it out who have every opportunity to get into the tournament and can't figure it out.
Chucking it in Church League. Thank you, Myron.
Thank you.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.